Welcome to the podcast, Amazing Tales from Off and On Connecticut's Beaten Path. And I'm your host, Mike Allen. Depending on just how old you are, you may or may not be familiar with the Woodstock Music Concert that was held in rural New York State in the 1960s. It more or less defined the slogan sex, drugs, and rock and roll for a generation of so-called hippies and what's come to be known as the counterculture movement. What you may not know is that Connecticut was supposed to have its own Woodstock in 1970, and although it didn't have any music, the audience did turn up anyway. Our guest today is Connecticut native and famous film producer Gorman Bouchard. He's producing a feature film on this incredible story about the Powder Ridge Ski Resort concert that never was. Gorman will be along in just a minute with his fabulous story. This week's trivia question, which Connecticut town saw an American flag being flown throughout the entire Civil War with the white stars in circles instead of rows as a protest? Stick around after the main program for the answer, because then you'll know the topic for next week's show. Amazing Tales from Off and On Connecticut's Beaten Path is brought to you by our sponsor, Yale New Haven Health. Yale New Haven Hospital was the very first hospital in Connecticut. They opened their doors 200 years ago and later introduced the entire country to the use of penicillin and chemotherapy. Today, some of the brightest minds in medicine choose to work there, and it's the primary teaching hospital for the prestigious Yale School of Medicine. For more information, log on to ynhhs.org. That's ynhhs.org. If you grew up at a time when the word hippie was mainstream, well, you'll definitely identify with today's episode. The 1960s and 70s in the U.S. were an interesting time, to say the least. And one of the new concepts that was emerging during those years was the notion of massive outdoor rock concerts. Now, the granddaddy of them all was the Woodstock concert in rural Sullivan County in New York State. Now, originally, promoters expected about 50,000 people at the site. But over the course of the four-day weekend, crowd estimates grew to about 500,000 people. It closed the New York State Thruway. Now, that was the summer of 1969. A few months later, a similar concert was held out in California at the Altamont Speedway. And you've probably heard about this. The Hell's Angels were providing security to keep people from coming on stage. And at one point, a concertgoer was stabbed to death by the security team. And obviously, word of that spread rapidly around the country. Well, just a year later, in 1970, it was decided to hold a summer concert at a ski slope in the middle of Connecticut at the Powder Ridge Ski Area in Middlefield, tiny town. And the list of performers was impressive. Just to name a few, hear this list. Fleetwood Mac, the Allman Brothers, James Taylor, Sly and the Family Stone, Joe Cocker, Little Richard, Janis Joplin, Chuck Berry, Melanie, Grand Funk Railroad, Richie Havens, John Sebastian, Van Morrison, Mountain, and still about a dozen others. It's called the event that featured sex, drugs, and no rock and roll, and you're going to hear why in just a moment. First, I want to tell you about our guest today, Gorman Bouchard. He's a well-known film producer and author. He was born in Waterbury and has produced 20 feature films and published 5 books, his work internationally renowned. And when he's not making movies, he's the man behind the New Haven Documentary Film Festival each and every year, drawing about 120 films each year to feature. Now, I don't usually do this in an episode because it does tend to date the episode, but as I speak, it's June of 2023, and Gorman's working on his latest feature film project, which is going to be about this topic, and it will likely be ready for viewing in 2024. So it depends on when you hear this episode. It may be upcoming or already released. Now, if it's still upcoming, you can learn more about his project at their website, PowderRidgeDocumentary.com. Again, PowderRidgeDocumentary.com. Gorman's research into this historic event, coupled with his great storytelling ability, make this episode particularly fascinating and engaging. So, Gorman, let's turn back the clock about 50 years. We had the famed Woodstock concert. We had Altamont out in California. The hippie movement was in full swing. Can you more or less characterize or maybe summarize what the mood of the country was like at that time?
Well, I mean, the mood of the country at that point was explosive, because if you start with the Woodstock in August of 69, you have the Manson murders, Woodstock, Altamont, Kent State, a very unpopular war in Vietnam, a very unpopular president with the younger people and Richard Nixon. It was a very divisive time, possibly even more so than today. But those rock concerts were still making a lot of money. One of the things that sort of spurned Powder Ridge was, in the spring of 1970, the Woodstock movie opens. Now, remember, Woodstock made no money as a festival, but made all of its money on the soundtrack and film. The film really did have line around the blocks, and thus enters a promoter, a guy we can say who was probably very well connected in the old school Italian terms in New York City, named Ray Filiberti. And he came up with the idea to do this music festival, sort of like profit off of the Woodstock experience. He also had a five-pitcher deal with Bob Evans at Paramount. The first pitcher would be this documentary, this Woodstock-like documentary on this proposed festival.
So now this promoter, who has some interesting connections apparently, contacts Lou Zemmel, right, the owner of the Powder Ridge Ski Resort, to set all this up.
Filiberti started looking for places. He got shut down on a place in upstate New York, and then he came upon this ski resort in Middlefield, Connecticut, basically right off of the I-91, so it's right off the highway. It's easy to get to, central Connecticut, a couple hours from Boston, Albany, or New York City. It was a perfect centralized location, and it was also a perfect location for a music festival. You had this gorgeous, like, ski slope. You put the stage at the bottom, and, you know, you basically have risers for the people so everyone can see versus the flat field Woodstock. So he approached Lou Zemmel, who was the owner of Powder Ridge, and at that time it was called Powder Hill, by the way, and proposed a festival, and they started putting everything together. Their original plans, if you look at the original proposal they gave to the city of Middlefield, which at that point only had 3,500 people, 3,500 extremely conservative people, let's put it that way as well.
Now, it turns out this promoter really is kind of an interesting operator, as show promoters go.
The first proposal was only to sell 18,000 tickets. And this is where things start getting a little weird. We have a promoter. As someone described him beautifully in one of the interviews I did, you know, he was a dreamer with the heart of a con man. I think that that pretty much says it all. He was definitely a schemer. As his son told me, they decided they were going to print up 50,000 tickets. Now, whether or not those tickets were printed up two, three, or four times, no one knows. The other big thing was, everything was in cash. I have tons of people saying they were paid for their services on this festival in paper bags filled with $20 bills. Thus, there's a lot of people that basically probably said, yeah, we never got paid because they never reported it. You don't want to be going back and getting audited by the IRS for the $25,000, $50,000 that you may or may not have gotten in cash. Let's go back into Middlefield's relationship with Lou Zemmel. Now, Lou Zemmel was a well-known communist, or at least a communist supporter. He even fought the right to go to Cuba all the way to the Supreme Court. There's a famous case called Zemmel versus Rusk. He was not liked in the town, to the point where his son told me that they would even get anti-Jewish graffiti scribbled on their garbage pails and things like that. Plus, the year before, there was the murder where Bobby Seale was accused of putting a hit on a man. That man's body was actually dumped in Middlefield. And in spring of 1970, Zemmel allowed the Black Panthers to have a rally at Powder Hill. What, like I said, was what it was called at the time. So the very conservative town did not like the very liberal Lou Zemmel.
There were some pretty impressive big-name bands booked to perform at Powder Ridge.
Filiberti starts putting together a lineup with the help of some large promoters out of New York. And the lineup is very similar to Woodstock. I mean, Joplin, Sly and the Family Stone, Joe Cocker. It's an amazing lineup. And tickets start selling. Like, tickets are literally flying out the door. The best we can tell is it's rumored that probably between 100 and 200,000 tickets were sold, which is putting it, it's, you know, a gross of 2 to 4 million again, all in cash. As his son told me, he was almost 10 years old at the time. And he would just be sitting in the living room every night after school and counting bags of $20 bills out for his dad. The town, however, starts really not liking the whole idea. Like I said, they don't get along with Zemel. I don't think they trusted the promoter. And they were also worried that many kids trying to get into such a small area, it would be dangerous for the kids. So the town puts an injunction and does everything to stop it. And eventually, by the Monday before the festival was supposed to start, the festival would have been July 31st, Friday, July 31st, Saturday and Sunday, August 1st and 2nd. On the Monday, the injunction comes down and cancels the festival. And what basically goes out is that any musician that tries to get in is going to be arrested on site, and we're going to do everything to keep the kids away. Unfortunately, this is pre-internet, and you have all these kids coming. Unless you're stopping to read a newspaper and or watch the nightly news, the average attendee here is between 15 and 25. They're not doing. They're coming anyway. And around 40,000 people roughly ended up on those hills that fateful weekend with no musicians allowed to come in.
Didn't the state police put up signs outside town telling concert goers, don't come, you turn back?
Absolutely. Yeah. Injunction, concert prohibited. You know, half the kids seem to not come from the entrance, but I mean, so many people came over the mountaintop from Meriden, you know, they were just sneaking in. Of the people I've interviewed, about only half actually had tickets.
You've actually been able to track down people who attended that concert 50 years ago?
Oh God, yeah. I have tons of people that have attended this concert.
What are they telling you about what it was like?
Their experience was it was the greatest party of their life. What you would read in the press is like what a mess it was and how dangerous it was. I have gotten virtually no one saying that. Everyone is like, it was just a peaceful party. Everyone was in their own little groups. We were making our own music. It was basically sex and drugs with no rock and roll.
So you've interviewed a lot of folks. Have you come across any of those volunteer doctors who were staging the triage centers?
I've talked to people who were medics, and I mean, yeah, there were definitely your usual overdoses, but I mean, I think that would be expected at any concert of this size in that era, but no one died. You had a baby that was born as well, a girl. We've located her, so we're going to try to like reach out to her as well. There really was a lot of drugs, and there was a lot of nudity and a lot of sex. I mean, that was basically what happened. It really did just become this crazy drug party. But the town, in all its wisdom, which I almost is inconceivable today, on the Friday, they cut the power thinking the kids would leave. So, I mean, imagine cutting the power to 40,000 kids on a ski slope in 90 degree heat. It's not the most responsible act, I would think. I mean, today those kids would have a class action suit.
What was the weather like? Do you know?
It was basically hot, no rain.
On the music front, it wasn't entirely quiet, though, right? Melanie and some other bands did manage to play a few songs.
There were some local bands playing on Thursday. The local bands were just setting up on small stages. There was a band called Swan as well. There were a few. But Melanie, she was home and she heard it was canceled. She said to her husband, who was her manager, said, screw it, I'm going anyway. She drove up. And when she got there, she found a 1010 Winds news truck and she asked them for a ride in. As she said, I just looked like every other hippie girl there, so they weren't going to stop me. They didn't know who I was. And she gets there, and a bunch of people realize she's there, but there's no power. It's Friday evening. They set up the generators of the Mr. Soft, the ice cream trucks that were there, to power her amplifiers, and she starts playing. And it's really just, she's not on the main stage. She's just lit on a little makeshift stage in front of one of the Mr. Softy trucks and just starts singing her songs. And slowly the crowd around her just grows. But there were many, many people way up on the hill who never even realized she was playing.
So what happened after the weekend was over? I've heard one story that says some of the attendees stayed the entire following week.
Oh, there were people that stayed for a month to help clean up. One of the things that's rarely mentioned in the press is, go back to Woodstock. Remember we had Wavy Gravy and the Hog Farm? Wavy Gravy was the guy who made all the announcements from the stage that says, you know, watch out for the brown acid. And they sort of kept the kids safe. But they couldn't do Powder Ridge, but there was a group called the Cosmic Labs, which was a counterculture group out of Yale, who did more or less the same things, made stage announcements. Hey, so-and-so, your mom called. Can you please call her back? Made sure that people in the crowds who were like worked fights. Anyone that was having a bad trip would be brought to the medic. They were sort of keeping the peace. And then they were also reporting back to Lou Zevil, who, you know, obviously at this point is looked upon as the bad guy because there's no music, despite the fact that it was at that point totally out of his control.
So there's a great twist to this story regarding how you became aware of this event even happening. You and I kind of grew up around the same time in Connecticut, and I was just young enough to not even be aware of this having taken place. Would you share your story of how you became aware of the aborted Powder Ridge Festival?
Well, my wife's father had been in the state police his entire life, and he had passed away. Shortly thereafter, we were driving down Route 91. There's a sign for the State Police Museum. And she was like, can we stop? And I'm like, sure. I always love weird little museums. You never know what you're going to find. And sure enough, she's looking for pictures of her dad. And I'm walking around. There's this picture of all these hippies, this beautiful black and white shot framed on the wall. And it looks like it should be Woodstock. But I'm like, you know, what is this? And my wife said, don't you remember my dad said he corrected traffic at a festival? And I was like, I didn't remember that. But so we started looking into it. And my wife was doing research for some of my stuff. And she's like, I think you might have a short film here. You know, sure enough, it's like I'm looking and going, yeah, this sounds really interesting. But then as we started peeling down the layer, you know, and realized there's mob involvement, there's Sid Luft, who is Judy Garland's husband. There's so much going on in this that we realized it really was a feature film. As I start putting calls out for, does anyone have any original Super 8 footage? Does anyone have any original photographs? We got some Super 8 footage, and I actually found her dad directing traffic in front of Gaida's food restaurant.
So do you go back today to Powder Ridge off-season when the slopes aren't filled with snow and just kind of ponder what it must have been like on that weekend in 1970?
Oh my God, yeah. In fact, I actually walked all the way up the hill. That's quite a walk, even if you're in shape. We were there in September shooting some drone footage, and it seems so tiny, it's hard to imagine 40,000 people. You know what? I mean, I think if it had happened, it probably would have been equal to Woodstock. But then there's also a part of me thinks, but if a 500,000 kids somehow showed up, then it might have been a problem, you know, that there wouldn't have been enough room.
The town restored electrical power on Saturday after realizing their effort for 24 hours didn't work. Although one might assume from hearing all these details that the party would have continued one way or another, with or without the power grid being available. That wraps up this episode of Amazing Tales from Off and On Connecticut's Beaten Path. If you want more information about this Powder Ridge film that is being made by Gorman Bouchard, please go to www.powderridgedocumentary.com. I want to thank our guest for today's program, Gorman Bouchard, film producer and executive director of the New Haven Regional Documentary Film Festival, each and every year right here in Connecticut. The answer to this week's trivia question, which Connecticut town saw an American flag flown throughout the entire Civil War with the white stars in circles instead of rows as a protest? Well, the answer is Brookfield, where two flags were flown, one the official stars and stripes and the other the opposition flag throughout the entire war. Now, the story of these dueling flags in Brookfield will be the featured topic next week on Amazing Tales CT, including the surprise outcome of what happened to that opposition flag after the war was over. Amazing Tales from Off and On Connecticut's Beaten Path is a production of True North Associates, LLC. This is Mike Allen. Be safe, and please stay healthy.